Welcome to another edition of Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk. Part 3 of Russian Magic, Living Folk Traditions of an Enchanted Landscape by Cherry Gilchrist. Published by Quest Books, Theosophical Publishing House in 2009. So the first bit to highlight, I'm just going to read it. Russian peasants would listen to the call of the rook on March 17th to divine the quality of the weather and the harvest for that year. A charming fairy story, The Lad Who Knew the Language of Birds, tells how a young lad called Vasily finds he can understand the song of a nightingale that is kept as a caged bird. The nightingale becomes his companion. They travel together, and the nightingale predicts the future, warns of forthcoming storms, and finally interprets the calling of ravens who are troubling a king to the monarch's satisfaction, so much so that he gives his daughter to Vasily in marriage. The idea that human beings can understand the language of the birds is still retained in Russian folk memory. It is not exclusive to Russia, of course, and may be a universal belief retained from the animistic and shamanic religions. Well, I would question the word belief and animistic and shamanic religions, but that's getting into analyzing the verbiage, so I'll leave it at that. Indicating that we, as humans, are part of the living cosmos, because that's the essence of what she's saying here, and that by opening ourselves to this teeming sphere of life, we can, to some extent, dissolve the boundaries of our own individual identity and align ourselves with other forms of life, understanding their language and their innate wisdom. It is the foundation of the shamanic trance state and seems to arise spontaneously even in our more, quote, rational, unquote, modern Western society. A friend of mine once told me how she had experienced the sensation of being a fox, of becoming that creature completely and being able to look through its eyes. Antonia White also wrote about it in her semi-autobiographical novel Beyond the Glass, a remarkable work describing how the heroine Clara descends into the underworld of insanity and emerges again. She suffers visions, for these are not necessarily pleasant experiences, in which she lives and dies as a salmon, as a horse, and finally, with skull split like a shell, is born and reborn with incredible swiftness as a woman, as an imp, as a dog, and finally as a flower, and returning at last to human consciousness. The shaman may, to some extent, merge with a bird as he practices his vision trance. The shaman Harold, who I visited in Tuva in Siberia, wore a headdress made of eagle feathers, which may have been a way of helping him to connect with the bird spirit, which enables him to fly to the sky world. This spirit is known in one Siberian tradition as Markut, M-A-R-K-U-T, bird of heaven. That goes on and on, so some fascinating stuff there. And then also along the lines of the, quote, fairy tale or, quote, mythology, there's a footnote here. The duck is often associated with the creation myths, both in the Finnish tradition, which links to ancient Slavic mythology, and in Siberian legends. A tale is told in the Kakhetia province of Siberia about two ducks which created the earth between them. First of all, the world was nothing but emptiness, but then the emptiness became filled with water, and two ducks appeared sitting on it. Tired of just floating, they decided to make land and mountains by diving for silt to shape them with. One of the ducks stole two of the stones, which angered her sister as it disturbed the pattern they were making, and she was subsequently dismissed to become ruler of the underworld, while the righteous duck remained queen of the upper regions. Now, what fascinates me about that quote is that, and I'd have to talk to native peoples and find out more, because I'm hesitant to assume something, but what amazes me is that the similarity to the origin story mostly heard from the Haudenosaunee or the Iroquois Nation about Turtle Island. You can look that up, and it's a story that takes a long time to fully tell. That the sky woman, in the short version, the sky woman came down from the sky and landed on the back of a turtle. And there was a bunch of animals, and eventually, I think it was the muskrat that dove down under the water and came up with a little bit of earth from the bottom of the ocean, bottom of the waters, under its nail. And that little bit of dirt got onto the back of the turtle, and that grew to create the earth. to create Turtle Island. So there, in the Russian story, is tired of just floating, they decided to make land and mountains by diving for silt to shape them with. So sounds to me like virtually the exact same storyline. So that is of utmost fascination, how different continents, similar story. Of course, Joseph Campbell did a lot of work showing the universality of various quote myths or origin stories. So that's a whole big topic. And another bit to highlight in the book is the here's a section, the esoteric tradition in Russia. Organized forms of philosophical and mystical healing are not just Western imports, however, since they have been a part of Russian culture for many centuries. Esoteric and semi-esoteric orders have also found Russian soil fertile. The Order of the Knights of St. John of Jerusalem, otherwise known as the Knights of Malta, with its high-powered rituals, was established in Russia during the reign of Peter the Great and flourished there officially for 100 years or so. A branch of the Theosophical Society was founded in Russia in 1908 to promote the teachings of Madame Helena Blavatsky, though it soon had to go underground after it was suppressed following the Bolshevik Revolution of 1917. According to today's Russian Theosophical Society, the breakdown of communism triggered the society's second official birth, although in fact its work never really stopped. In all these years, illegally, it led a closed but spiritually rich life devoted to its ideals. Other movements too, such as the sacred cosmology and dances taught by Gurdjieff and the philosophy of his pupil Ouspensky, gained a firm following in Russia before the revolution and are said to have continued in secret during all the decades of communism. And due to the Russian love of the magical and mystical, certain ways of knowledge such as astrology and even perhaps the Kabbalah were tolerated to some extent by the authorities. I have heard that some officials and party members were rather keen on such practices themselves. So there again is a mention of the, as was mentioned in part one, the tolerance of different ways other than just the Orthodox Church, which is what is the most powerful aspect of the Russian culture, as far as I know, in the religious sense right now. So there is an openness. I remember seeing some book about unexplained mysteries and psychic phenomenon and stuff. So I find that fascinating. It helps to bust through the stereotypes of a quote foreign country. And I add in the topic of the times, one that is getting much venom and Russia phobia, which again, as I mentioned, I see as a political geopolitical tactic that was similarly posed towards the Islamic people when the global war of terror began. So on that note, I want to wrap up book series. Fascinating book. Much practical information and mystical and stuff you can further explore and look up more and perhaps touch into some of your ancestry. So I want to touch in on the importance of language, and this is an article called Retired Swiss Military Intelligence Officer. So this is not mainstream. This is not your major news, which in my opinion is spouting a narrative that is highly propagandized and promoting a binary narrative of good and bad as far as Russia and Ukraine. And to the and is involved in a whole censorship campaign. So it's very disturbing stuff. But this is something other than that. And the kind of stuff I like to read. A retired Swiss military intelligence officer. And the article is by Jacques Baud, B-A-U-D. Seems like it was first posted at the UNZ review on April 2nd of 2022. So I find that interesting, sort of like whistleblowers or retired people. They would seem to me to have more inside information, objective opinion from experience rather than newsrooms that are spouting propaganda lines that are fed across the board, which has been proven that news gets out and around the globe, all the news channels will spout the exact same lines. So it's being written somewhere else, titled, Is It Possible to Actually Know What Has Been and Is Going On in Ukraine? Here's the thing I found fascinating, because I had read mention of this about the Russian language. I think they say, what is it, language is the first casualty in the war. So, and it starts, here's a section, I'll just read a little bit. Let's try to examine the roots of the Ukrainian conflict. It starts with those who for the last 8 years have been talking about separatists or independentists from Donbass. This is a misnomer. The referendums conducted by the two self-proclaimed republics of Donetsk and Lugansk in May 2014 were not referendums of independence, as some unscrupulous journalists have claimed, but referendums of self-determination or autonomy. The qualifier pro-Russian suggests that Russia was a party to the conflict, which was not the case, and the term Russian speakers would have been more honest. Moreover, these referendums were conducted against the advice of Vladimir Putin. In fact, these republics were not seeking to separate from Ukraine, but to have a status of autonomy guaranteeing them the use of the Russian language as an official language. Because the first legislative act of the new government resulting from the American-sponsored overthrow of the democratically elected President Yanukovych was the abolition on February 23, 2014, of the Kivalov-Koleshnichenko Law of 2012 that made Russian an official language in Ukraine. A bit like if German Putschists decided that French and Italian would no longer be official languages in Switzerland. The decision caused a storm in the Russian-speaking population. The result was fierce repression against the Russian-speaking regions. Odessa, how do you pronounce them? I don't know. Dnipropetrovsk, Kharkov, Lugansk, and Donetsk, which was carried out beginning in February 2014 and led to a militarization of the situation and some horrific massacres of the Russian people in Odessa and Mariupol, the most notable. So this gets into, obviously, a loaded topic. But suffice it to say that the language, ability to speak the language, and what does the language do? The language connects back to what the book The Russian Magic is talking about and the folk traditions. And I will bet you, without knowing the facts, that in that region, despite the demarcations of different countries and areas that going way, way back, the folk traditions and the, quote, mythologies would transcend those lines and barriers. And the language is exactly as a casualty for the native peoples of Turtle Island are now working on, you know, getting, preserving as much of their languages as possible. I quoted in my recent book, I'll just read this one paragraph, in The Power of Language. In an interview about his book, How to Hide an Empire, Daniel Immerwahr said, "It's an important time to recognize that one of the things that empires do is they try to enforce a sort of homogeneity. They try to export the standards of the motherland onto the colonies, and often that's a violent and difficult process. Certainly that's been true in the United States and its territories as it sought to export and enforce English. One of the more dramatic instances of this is on Guam, where we have accounts of a naval officer who went around burning all English Chamorro dictionaries as a way to try to extirpate the local language and enforce English." So while the mainstream news and much of any news will rarely touch on the language, that is the connection to the traditions and the stories. So that's part of the reason why I focused on this book and accentuating in whatever culture that people have the ability to speak their languages. So thank you for listening. Have a good one and be well.